Welcome to Bellingham Technical College's Money Smarts podcast. I'm your host, Matt Benoit. Each episode, we'll talk with BTC students, staff, community professionals, and financial experts about financial literacy and wellness, all to help listeners navigate resources in the community and empower themselves financially. Today, we're here with Corey Olson. We had you on a previous episode of this podcast. It was actually about childcare, but will you remind listeners of what you do at BTC?
Sure. I work in the Workforce Funding Department here at Bellingham Technical College. And what that is it's a series of grant-funded programs that help students with support with their tuition, tools, books, childcare, transportation, anything beyond traditional financial aid.
So, in other words, you spend quite a bit of time talking with BTC students about funding.
Yes.
All right. So, first of all, what are some strategies you use within your position to help students feel comfortable approaching you with questions about their funding?
Well, first and foremost, I think it's really important when students come in to help them feel comfortable. Sometimes looking for funding opportunities, honestly, it can be confusing. There's a lot of language that goes around it. So what we try to do is just to be really universal in how we speak to students, to take out, you know, the acronyms and the fluff language, but also to just realize that that can be a stressful time for students. You know, often with workforce funding programs, you do have to meet certain eligibility criteria. So that may mean we have to look at your income, or you've gone through unemployment processes, or you're going through some significant life transitions. So really, myself and my fellow coordinators, what we try to do is just sit down, make people feel comfortable about talking about money and about talking about these funding resources and making sure they're clear on their participation in these various programs.
Part of the goal of this podcast is to get folks comfortable with talking about money. So when we're seeking assistance with our finances, we're putting ourselves in somewhat of a vulnerable position because money can be such a taboo topic in our society. So, but why do you think money is such a taboo topic?
You know, I think money is a taboo topic because it is so pervasive to all aspects of our lives. And it's a very personal topic. If you think about it, money crosses several lines, generational lines, cultural lines. There's power dynamics that come with have and have not, the political spectrum. So I think it becomes someone's personal story. And with all of that wrapped up in there, that does become a very personal topic, right? Just one of those topics alone would be personal, let alone having money attached to it. For me, I had a situation where I was making very good money back in 2008. I was a real estate agent, and, you know, 2008, that market was booming. A lot of people were in that business. Overnight, you know, the bubble burst. I had a four-bedroom house that went into foreclosure, and from a Tuesday to a Wednesday, I went from that house to a one-bedroom room at my parents' house with my toddler. So that story, I'm willing to share that story, but that became very personal to me, and people all the time are riding those tides. If you think about it and you purchase your first home, that's a very exciting thing. Guess what that's attached to? That's attached to your finances. Or if you lose a job, you know, guess what that's attached to? That's attached to your finances. So I think it just really envelopes every aspect of our life so that it makes it difficult sometimes to communicate about those things.
In your position, sharing a lot of things with students and helping them, do you share your personal anecdotes with students? Was it difficult for you to get to a point where you felt comfortable doing that?
Yes, it definitely was a process for me. I mean, of course, when you go through a major situation like that, your first thing is sort of that survival mode of just trying to put things back together. But I feel so connected to the students that I work with here because I went through very similar systems and some grant funding possibilities that they did to get where they're going. So I feel like I understand their roadmap. When I moved back, I actually had to move back to my parents' house to Bellingham here. I was able to get TANF, which is money that you can get through DSHS to help you rebuild. I was able to get assistance with my child care so that I could get on to my next position. And ironically enough, I figured, well, real estate is bust, so I need to go where the jobs are in demand. And in 2008, the jobs were in demand at the unemployment office. So I ended up getting a job at the unemployment office where I learned about all of these opportunities, and it is absolutely my passion to help people that have experienced something so similar to what I've been through. So yes, that's helped me open up quite a bit. I'm very willing to share my story because I don't think it's an isolated story. I think a lot of people have some remnants of it. And the more that we're able to talk about it, the more, or actually the, I'd say the less we feel isolated in that situation.
So you mentioned TANF. What exactly does that stand for?
Oh, that is Temporary Assistance for Needy Families.
Okay. So when we talk about this discomfort with talking about money, do you think this could start at a young age?
Absolutely. If I think about back on my childhood, we never really talked a lot about money. I think the one story that I remember is we always saved our change. My dad had a huge glass jar, and he said if we saved our change, that he would take us to Disneyland. I got to go when I was 30. So that was that was the point of understanding money in my family. And for me, it was just sort of a watch and learn process, but we didn't have a lot of communication around that. And I think because some of these cultural things, these generational things, or just, again, money is such a personal topic that it's not always taught at home. So I don't necessarily think that kids are getting that full education at a young age.
So in a previous episode, we discussed who's responsible for teaching the public, including young people, about money. So what's your opinion on that? Should it be parents, teachers, media, family members, some combination thereof?
I would say some combination thereof. I would say, honestly, the parents or whoever is your mentor within your family should be having those conversations. It's not just about the conversations, though. They watch what you do. My eldest just recently told me, she said, I noticed that you tend to spend your money. You like something, you go and get it. And dad, he hardly ever spends money and he researches it and then he buys what is the best product. So just knowing that your kids are watching and engaging them in that conversation. But now there's programs such as Junior Achievement that are going out into the schools. So, you know, having that layer in there too, having some aspect of being able to balance a budget, you know, within the even the middle school curriculum is absolutely necessary.
So back to your personal life, how do you teach your own children about money? And actually, first of all, how many children do you have and how old are they?
So I have two girls. One is 6 and one is 12. And I have multiple mediums for which I try to teach them about money. And I will tell you, not everything sticks. It's kind of by trial and error. The first thing I would say that I've always done from a young age with both of them is I've had them pay for their items at the grocery store. So I may be supplying the money, but they have that exchange with the cashier because I want that to be something that becomes comfortable for them. Other things that I've done is I've created some fun games. I created a game that's kind of a pizza board, and you can take your toppings and put them on different categories, like let's say you're saving for your education or your retirement or food. You get to put those toppings anywhere on the board to begin with, but then as you go through the game, there's pitfalls there. So let's say you forgot to put money on insurance, then suddenly there's a roof fire or something, so then you start to lose toppings. And that was effective for my 6-year-old, because my 6-year-old, when we first started playing the game, wanted to put all the toppings on food, because what's important to a 6-year-old? Food. By the end of it, she was mad that I hadn't saved for her education, so that stuck. I had one trial and error where I decided to try to teach my kids that, you know, if you put your change in a jar and you bury it, a money tree is going to grow. And I told him it was magic. And my 12-year-old said, that's Pinterest. Okay, that wasn't going to work for her. But I did it with the 6-year-old and it was great. We filled it up with change. The tree grew. Suddenly there was a money tree outside and I thought I had it spot on. Until the next day she ran out there and wanted to see why there wasn't more dollar bills on that tree. So it is a multi-layered approach, but for me, it is really about building in the accountability. I want them to understand wants and needs, so if they get money to go out and buy a toy, we come home and we donate to that are now old. So it's just kind of about that, you know, if you want something, you need to be willing to do the give and take.
So obviously they are learning quite a bit from you. Are they also, I mean, I know they're a little bit younger. When I was in high school, I took, and this was an elective, I could take a personal finance class, which I did, and I found that relatively helpful. But an elective is not required, obviously. So at a young age, the ages that they are they getting information from school?
Actually, I was really impressed. My 6-year-old has not had that yet, but my 12-year-old is in middle school and came home and was really into this project that she had with other friends. The teacher assigned them to decide, what do you want to do as a career? How much money does that career make on average? What type of education would you need for that? What would your education cost you? Would, if you wanted to move into a house with that, you know, particular occupation, how much would that cost you? What's the cost of living? So now she wants to be an orthopedic surgeon. She'll probably change her mind throughout the years, but she really did have to go through all of those steps to make these solid decisions. And it was the first time I'd seen her super interested in a career path. So she got that from school by doing sort of the financial part of that.
Do you feel like even at a relatively young age with that sort of having your child be exposed to that kind of information? I mean, I think when you're younger and you're not an adult and you're not doing those things, it all seems very foreign. Do you feel like that is, that makes everything slightly more tangible and understandable to her?
To my 12-year-old that had the... Yes, I think she's thinking along those lines now. I mean, if you think about it, wow, she only has 6 years before she graduates. So having that, you know, I wish I had that growing up because I might have made different decisions about what educational choice I chose or what career track I chose. That's one of the reasons I love Bellingham Technical College, because we have so much in technical and trade that lead to these high wage positions. So yes, I think that that did plant a seed for her, and that that's something that should continue to grow at home too.
So why do you think it's so important to talk about money at such a young age? I mean, your 6-year-old, you know, for instance, I mean, that's quite young.
I think given the experience that I had or that I've had throughout the years with money, I want my girls to be able to be independent, and I want them to be able to save for surprises and emergencies. And I also want them to feel really confident in being able to talk about those things that sometimes seem like a taboo topic, so that they can just get better information and be better informed to have, you know, safe and solid lives.
Yeah, and if you lay that foundation for financial wellness and understanding early in life, they're probably going to, as they encounter various financial challenges and various financial goals, they're probably going to feel that much more confident and in control about it.
Yep, and self-sufficient.
Exactly. So do you know of any resources for parents and their children that can help teach about money?
Yes, I do. There's a really good website. It's run by Washington State. It's actually Washington State Department of Financial Institutions, kind of a mouthful, but there is, I'll give you the website address. But if you go on there, there is savvy money saving videos for kids, and they're very kid friendly. They have cartoon characters, so it's a great way to kind of start setting the stage for those conversations. That website address is www.dfi.wa.gov.
So is there anything else you'd like to add about the subject of teaching young people about money, or do you think we've kind of touched all the bases?
No, I think we've touched all the bases. I would just say for, you know, parents that are worried about, I don't know, engaging in those conversations, go for it. Kids are really receptive, and there are ways of talking about money and financing and all these things that sound big and scary that can be made fun. So I would just say be open to those conversations.
Excellent. Well, Corey, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the BTC Money Smarts podcast. Be sure to check out all our episodes on the BTC website. They're loaded with stories, tips, tricks, and strategies for financial literacy. This podcast is produced by Cheryl Kennedy with music courtesy of bensound.com. I'm Matt Benoit. We'll see you next time.